The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice.
Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911.
In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Welcome to Scrambled. This is a big episode. It's episode 60. I'm Chad Douglas alongside my co-host Nikki Shields. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Chad. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm here. It's been a little bit of a rough day, but you know what? It's not about me, at least yet. We'll get into that episode, get into that a little later in this episode. So we, again, want to thank everyone for sticking with us for a three-part episode on ADHD that we did the last three episodes. Dr. Tanya Royster, I think, gave us some great information. So if you can share that information with any of your friends or family members, please do so, because I think there is a lot to learn there. We also have a guest on this episode, and this is another, I think it's going to be filled with a lot of good information, and not even necessarily for the kids who have anxiety or ADHD. I think this goes for all children.
Absolutely. I am excited to introduce you to our guest, Sarah Olscher. Sarah is a children's book author and illustrator, and she is the founder of Mighty and Bright. Welcome, Sarah, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, so we're talking about difficult conversations to have with children. Where do we start? What is considered a difficult conversation for a child?
I would say anything that's going to change their life in a significant way is usually how I think about it. Like whether you're moving to a new place or you're getting a divorce, or maybe you have a major illness, a chronic illness, or something like cancer, where you really have to sit your kids down and say, hey, you know, I need to talk to you about something. Like, that's kind of hard.
Sure. Is there a way to kind of ease into that by having quote unquote difficult conversations about less important topics, just as kind of a practice?
I would say that there's nothing that is going to make talking to your kids about cancer any easier. Okay. But I would say like getting prepared before you have that conversation is probably helpful. I also think like unfortunately, we're all going to have to talk to our kids about death at some point. Mm-hmm. And so there are ways you can prepare for like setting a foundation for just like understanding how bodies work and the concept that nothing lives forever, so that when you are having to have a conversation about something that, you know, affects them personally and that they feel, you know, a connection to, that at least they're not having to understand, you know, the concept of nothing lives forever at the same time as they're trying to process something personal.
So true. Yeah. So you can practice, you can lay foundations, but ultimately, if it's a hard conversation, it's just going to be a tough conversation, and there's mm-hmm. no way to truly, truly prep for that. So, you know, what led you to this? How did you become an expert at this?
I would say, so my background is in psychology, but I studied adults. And I think had I known how fascinating children are, perhaps would have studied them instead. Mm-hmm. When my daughter was 18 months old, I went through a pretty traumatic divorce, and I didn't know how to handle my toddler's anxiety. I had lots of coping skills myself as a grown-up, but I was like, I don't know how to help somebody who really isn't that verbal and who doesn't understand what I'm saying. So I found a therapist that would take toddlers, a trauma-informed therapist, and she really just like blew my mind open, because I realized I was not giving my daughter enough credit. Like, she understood way more than I thought she did. Huh. And there were a lot of things that I should have explained to her at that age that I didn't. And one of the things that was really a light bulb moment for me was when the therapist was going on vacation, she pulled out this like construction paper calendar that she had made using like Crayola markers and like Dora the Explorer stickers, and was like, usually you see me on this day, but instead you're going to see me on this day. And I said to the therapist, like, okay, I don't, like, is this really necessary? Like, she doesn't even understand the concept of like yesterday, today, and tomorrow, let alone she's going to miss you a week from now. And the therapist was like, actually, it really can erode trust between a therapist and a child if we miss a session and we don't talk about it. Huh. And so the whole way home, I'm just like thinking over and over in my head, like, it can really erode trust between a therapist and a child to miss one session. Meanwhile, our lives are total chaos and no one said a single word. And so I went home and I pulled out this, like, I had this, all these like magnetic alphabet letters that were on this dryer, this like pan that you stick underneath a refrigerator. It's like a little magnetic tray. And I ripped it off the wall and I used electrical tape and some like janky magnets. And I made her a visual schedule and it had pictures of me. It had pictures of school. It had pictures of her dad. And I just laid it out and I was like, this is the day that you see mommy. This is the day that you see daddy. And when I tell you it was a night and day difference, I am not exaggerating. It was incredible. And so that really is what got me into this, because I thought, if something so simple can make such a big difference in her anxiety, you know, why is nobody talking about this? Because I had Googled it and I was the first co-parenting calendar out there. Everybody was talking about the grownups. Let's figure out how we can stop fighting about the custody schedule. Put the kids first. No one's talking to the kids.
And when she was 18 months old.
Yes.
She's just a little thing at that time.
Yes. Yes. So it was really illuminating for me. And so then I started really studying kids and how they learn and how they understand things. And then like 4 years later, 4.5 years later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I was 34. She was 6.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, this is like the worst thing ever. And I thought, I have to explain to her what is going on. And so I went and bought like a whole bunch of children's books thinking that that was going to help me have the conversation. And I realized that what was out there was not acceptable to me. They really did not explain what was actually going on. There were a lot of like analogies and like things that really just actually made it more confusing and kind of scary. And so I realized I was going to have a conversation myself. And I, from all of my research, I really understood that kids can really understand things if we can just put it in terms that they understand. So I explained to her how our bodies work. I explained to her what cells are and how cells can build and build and build, because they can make copies of themselves. But sometimes a broken cell gets made and it forgets what its job is. And all it knows what to do is make a whole bunch of copies of itself. And so you have like this big old clump of confused, broken cells, and you have to take that out of the body because it can make it hard for the other cells to do their jobs. And it was like, you know, I'm sitting down having this really awful conversation with her and she's like, okay. And I said, do you have any questions? And she said, are you going to die? And I said, well, you know what? Some people have a whole bunch of these cells and their bodies don't work anymore after a while because none of the cells can do their jobs. But I only have a few of them and they can cut them out and then my body will be just fine. So I'm really not worried about that. And then she's like, okay. She went in the other room and she says to my mom, mommy told me. And my mom was like, what did she tell you? And she was like, she has something. I don't remember what it's called, but she's going to be fine.
But you satisfied her questions. And let me just say too, that a couple of weeks ago, my seventh grader had life science homework that was about cells. I could have used that talk, Sarah, 2 weeks ago. Would have really helped that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was such a good description. And like, I don't want to, it was life changing. Like just thinking about it in that way. Yeah. It actually makes me feel more calm about it. I love that. And I love that her takeaway was, yeah, she's got something, but she's going to be okay.
But because she's going to be okay.
That's what kids are looking for from us. They just want to know that it's going to be okay.
Totally. Yeah. And I also think it's really important to take the pressure off of ourselves when we're having any kind of conversation like this, that it should not be a one and done conversation. And so we don't have to get it perfect the first time, because we're always going to remember, you know, something we should have said, or they're going to forget what we said. Just like my daughter couldn't remember what I had, it was important for me to go back and make sure that she heard the word cancer and that she also understood that other people attach a lot of meaning to the word cancer. And so I wanted to prepare her that, you know, some people are going to find out that I have cancer and they're going to have really strong reactions because they don't know whether I have a couple of cells that are broken or my whole body is filled with them. And most people who get cancer are not 34. So, you know, I wanted her to be prepared. And so I said to her, you know, I want you to know that this is cancer, but that cancer can mean a lot of different things. And that when people have a strong reaction, you come back to me and you know, you and I have an understanding of what is going on with me. And it, whatever their reaction is, it's just because they don't know what we know. So these are the kinds of things you have to come back and say later.
Yeah. Right. And leaving the door open for future questions too. Go ahead, Nikki.
Totally. Yeah.
And that was going to be my point as well, is that it isn't ever just a one and done. I remember when my mother-in-law passed away, she had had a battle with cancer and we went up to see her, not realizing that it was probably the last time. And we left our kids here with my parents. And so we got back and I had to let them know that grandma had passed away. And I was like sick over it. Just absolutely. I mean, she was 5 at the time. So this was going to be the hardest conversation I'd ever had. And I was like, I took the train home and just like literally throwing up with anxiety because yeah. I didn't know how I was going to tell this child that her person, you know, was no longer here. And so, you know, got myself all psyched up for it, sat down with her. I had gotten there early in the morning. And so she just had, or was about to have breakfast. And we sat down and talked and I was like, I need to talk to you about something. And she said, did grandma die? And I said,
wow.
Yeah, she did. And she's like, is she in heaven? Oh yes. Yes. She's in heaven. Okay. Can we go have some Fruit Loops, you know, and it was so matter of fact. And then what I didn't know in that moment is we were far from done, right? Mm-hmm. She's 15 now and we still have conversations about what happened and and that loss for her. And it really is an ongoing process to help children understand. And I feel like they get like to each new developmental level, you kind of have to go through it again. And so that like leads to my question for you. Do you feel like in your experience, you kind of have to re-explain some things as they get older and have a newer lens for things?
Yeah, my daughter's 13 now and the conversation she had a dream this morning. She was like, I had a dream you had cancer again and you died. Wow. You know, and it's like, you know what? That is reasonable. You know, I think there's a lot of things we do because we want to protect our kids or we, a lot of people are like, I had a very good friend who had cancer since her daughter was born. It's a very strange kind of cancer that would just like go away and then come back in different parts of her body. And she never used the word cancer with her daughter. And I spent probably 3 years trying to convince her to have this conversation and she wouldn't do it. And then she died. And her daughter had no idea, was third grade, had no idea what was going on.
Yikes.
And so we're not protecting our kids by not having the conversation with them. And we also have to realize that we can't protect them from everything. And that, in fact, when things happen in childhood, we feel really bad as parents, like that we didn't protect them from like the evils of the world, so to speak. But we're there to hold their hands and to help them cope. And those are skills that they're learning from us in childhood that will serve them for the rest of their lives. So being able to really be honest with your kids and just be like, I'm sorry you had that dream. Like, that's really scary. And I'm okay. And, you know, but I understand, like, that's probably going to be a worry you have for a really long time.
You know, and I think you hate as a parent too, because you worry so much about your children. You forget that they also worry about you. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was a kid, you know, my mom and dad might have an argument. I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to get divorced.
Totally. Well,
they never did, you know, and if my wife and I ever get to the point where we have an argument, then yeah, my kids may in theory say, you know, you're going to get a divorce. And that's not always the case. I mean, and I've had professionals tell me like your kids should see you argue so they know how to rectify the situation. Mm-hmm. So thankfully we don't argue that much, but you know, to my kids, they live in the loudest, meanest house in the world. So that happens.
Yeah. That can't be because that's my house.
maybe we're second. Yeah. How do you go, either one of you, how do you go about making sure there's that trust between you and your child that when you have to have these conversations, they know where you're coming from?
Yeah, I love that. I love that question so much, because I think so much of what we do as parents is about building that trust and, you know, trying to make sure that our kids know that if something is wrong, we will tell them about it, because we are telling them, we're there for them when something hard is happening, and we are approaching it honestly so that when they come to us and they're worried about something, they know that we're going to talk to them about it. We're not going to run away. My aunt died of breast cancer, and she and my uncle were not honest with their kids about what was going on. They hid it. Mm-hmm. And now my cousins are in their 50s and still angry about that.
Sure.
So I think it's just a matter of just reassuring kids and then backing it up with our actions that, you know, we're here to talk to them about anything that they have questions about, that we will not get angry at them. And then we really hold ourselves to the fire on that, where if our kid comes to us with a mistake that they've made, you know, we might be frustrated, but we're like, okay, I hear you. People make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Let's talk this out. Let's figure out a solution. And that's what really builds trust, in my opinion.
And I know Nikki and I have talked in previous episodes about your return on investment with children is like decades long. So the mm-hmm. seeds you're planting now, you're hoping they grow the right way. Mm-hmm. So when they are adults, it's, you've had that kind of positive impact on them. But mm-hmm. yeah, difficult conversations, certainly hard. How did you then go from, I need to make this into a children's book?
Yeah. So I think it was comparing what was out there to how I explained it to my daughter. And then, you know, I immediately took a leave of absence from my work at a startup to go through cancer treatment, because it turned out I actually had more than a couple of cells that were broken. Right. They found them in my lymph nodes. So I had to have chemotherapy and radiation and like 5 surgeries. Yikes. But I have one of those minds that won't stop. And mm-hmm. so I needed some kind of creative outlet. And I spent most of my treatment drawing cells. And yeah. I wrote my first book, which was called Cancer Party. And all it did was basically explain the science of cancer. And that was it. And then something about it, like, just felt like this needs to be out into the world. And so midway through my treatment, I started sending it out to different publishers. And I got like 4 letters back that said, it's a great book, but we just don't feel like cancer is a big enough niche. And then as someone with no hair, I was pretty frustrated by this.
Yes.
And I thought, that is disgusting. And I don't want to wait 6 months to get rejection letters. I wonder if there's a way that I can put this into the world myself. And so I had a social worker who I showed it to, because she was helping my daughter cope with my cancer. And she was like, oh, you know, I wrote a book about suicide a long time ago, and I uploaded it to Amazon. Maybe you could mm-hmm. do that. So I did that, and it immediately was a bestseller in its category. And I was like, okay, not in a big enough niche. There are a lot of parents who need this.
Because people don't want to talk about it.
Right. And so that was the beginning. And it really made me think, you know, I don't want to deal with, like, I'm going to start my own publishing company, because I don't want to deal with other publishers telling me what is and isn't a need. Because mm-hmm. I know for sure that there are tons of parents who want to be able to explain certain things to their kids, and there's just nothing out there. And what if it's not going to sell 8 million copies? I don't care. If it helps, you know,
one,
however many parents, it's worth my time. And so that was what started it. And then so I wrote my second book, which was kind of similar to Cancer Party in that it explained the science of cancer, but then it explained how it affects a child's day-to-day life to have an adult with cancer. So it's called What Happens When Someone I Love Has Cancer. And then that book is used in children's hospitals all over the country. And I somehow ended up finding a child life specialist. Those are the people in the hospitals that explain, you know, medical things to kids. They reached out to me and said, this is a fantastic book. I really wish you would make one for children with their own cancer diagnosis. And then another child life specialist asked for one for siblings. And long story short, 11 books later, I have 4 books for cancer treatment. My latest book is explaining chronic illness to kids. So like, as somebody who's gone through cancer treatment, it isn't just like, okay, you're done with radiation, now everything's fine.
Yeah.
Your body takes like 5 years to recover. Wow. And it's very much like having a chronic illness or an autoimmune problem where you just don't have the energy to get through the day. And that can be really disappointing to kids. And a lot of parents don't think about, like, you know, how do I set my kid up so that, like, they're not disappointed literally every day? And so they have some kind of context for understanding why I can't play tag and do laser tag and go outside on a picnic and a hike all in the same day. And so I wanted to write a book that really explained that to kids, because as I've discovered, if there's no resource to make it easier to talk about hard things, parents are just not going to do it.
That's exactly right.
Well, I love the one on siblings too, because my daughter, when she was born, she was a preemie. And so she spent 8 weeks in the NICU, 2.5 hours away from where we lived. Our son at the time was 2.5. So we weren't around a lot because we had to be with her. And so I often had that thought. I'm like, somebody needs to do something that explains to siblings why mom and dad are away or why sister or brother's in the hospital. So I'm glad that crossed your thought.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The one, it's really very sad. The siblings of cancer patients are often referred to as glass children because they're incredibly fragile and everybody just looks right through them.
Oh man.
And so that,
like, hurts my heart.
I know, mine too. And I was like, I don't care if this book sells 4 copies,
glass children.
You know, these kids need to be seen. They need to understand that their feelings that they're having of loneliness or jealousy, you know, all of these feelings are totally normal and that their parents still love them. Their parents are just like, necessarily, as you know, Chad, like, you have to focus on the child that's sick. And so, yeah, I really just wanted to do something for them.
Wow. What's that? What's the title of that book?
What Happens When My Sibling Has Cancer. Okay.
I like that they're all plainly labeled too, because you get what you pay for, kind of thing. You know what you're getting as soon as you get it.
Yep.
So one more question, then I'll shut up and let Nikki talk for a little bit. So children's books, great. Why did you decide to do children's books instead of writing ones for adults?
That's such a good question. I really don't like reading nonfiction books as an adult. I think maybe it's just I've spent the vast majority of my parenting life as a single mom who is really exhausted. And so I would read the same paragraph over and over again because I'd fall asleep every night and then pick it up and not remember what I read.
Yep.
And I really believe that there's simple ways of explaining things that are light bulb moments for adults as well. Like five of my books are about emotions and understanding things like how the nervous system works. And I have had adults read these books. I had one the other day. I have one that's called Don't Believe Everything You Think. And it's all about, like, basically these, like, lies that we tell ourselves. And I had an adult reach out to me. She was like, I bought this book for my daughter, but can I just tell you, this was, like, the most illuminating thing I've ever read. And it changed my life. And I was like, wow.
I'm thinking I might want to get a copy of that because I think we're all
you for sure do.
Yeah.
So I think it's a lot easier to absorb the information. It doesn't have to be super detailed. And I think a lot of books for adults just say the same thing over and over for 250 pages.
And you said you're an illustrator too. So that was a nice creative outlet for you.
Yeah.
You said you had your mind working overdrive there.
Yeah.
All right, Nikki, you're up.
Oh God, now I got to come up with some good questions. No, I had stockpiled, like, what age group are these books for? But you just answered that it's, like, literally for everyone. Everyone can benefit regardless of age because it's the information is just so clear.
I would say that for the younger kids, it's funny because I've always just kind of naturally, when I'm reading books to my daughter, just kind of edited the words out if they were too complicated. But I recognize that's not something that a lot of, like, every parent knows how to do. There are a lot of words in the cancer treatment books I want to make sure that you know how to explain radiation to your kids if that's what you're going to have. And if you're not really that great at like editing words down and just being like, it's a laser beam instead of like, you know, then it's probably best for kids 4 and up. Okay. But you can, but the, with the illustrations, you can really just explain to kids with the illustrations what's going on.
That's awesome. Well, I'll be ordering one of each. Immediately following.
Yeah, is there like a bundle like the Friends DVD set you can just get on? Yes. Once?
I love that comparison. Yeah.
Well, and this is you know, maybe more educational than Friends, but equally.
I don't know. Right? I mean,
I learned so much about things from Friends.
Same.
It's true. We all kind of trivia night. That. I don't have any more questions about the books per se. Mm-hmm. I am curious if you have any tips for parents. So a lot of our listeners are parents with kids who are maybe struggling with anxiety or other mental health conditions. Knowing, you know, what you know and all of the work that you've done, mm-hmm. what are three basic things that parents should be aware of when trying to talk to their kids about hard stuff?
Definitely as far as like timing for talking to your kids, do it at like the beginning of the weekend. You might think that setting up a distraction for them is a good thing so that they're not like sitting in their feelings, but sending them to school or sending them to camp after having a big conversation can be really difficult. There's a big difference between like, let's watch a movie together and like, hey, go to school and have to like keep your crap together all day, kid. Yeah. That also gives them the space over the weekend to ask you questions. But also don't push it. You know, I think kids will come to us in their own time as long as we make ourselves available. Some kids don't want to talk about it right away, and that's okay. The other thing I would say, depending on their age, definitely for kids ages like 2.5 to 8, I would say showing them how whatever change is going to happen will affect their day-to-day is a game changer. So like I was saying with my co-parenting calendar that I created with my daughter, there are all kinds of changes that happen that kids really don't understand unless they are visual and like in front of their faces. And so my company is called Mighty and Bright, and I started it with this co-parenting calendar, but now I have them for cancer treatment, obviously, but just like day-to-day kids with anxiety. It really made a huge difference with my daughter. Anytime kids are asking lots of questions about what's going on every day or when something is happening and they're dreading it or they're excited about it, they're going to ask 1,000 questions. And it's because they don't actually know when it's happening. Mm-hmm. If they did, they wouldn't ask. Mm-hmm. And so it really helps depending on what's going on, especially if you're moving or if somebody is going to the doctor or, you know, they're going through treatment of some kind, to show them that on a calendar. It really makes a big difference for them because it helps them process. They process pictures and repetition. If it's visual, it makes a mm-hmm. game-changing difference. I might have to think about a third thing.
Well, I'll give you a minute to think on that. And maybe there isn't a third thing. Maybe those two points are super important and the most important thing. But my tip to parents has always been, if kids are asking questions, they need more information. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, you made that very clear. And it isn't one and done. You know, like we said early on in the episode, kids sometimes have to kind of reevaluate things through new experiences or new developmental stages. And so providing information is really, really helpful. And I do think a lot of problem behaviors can be rooted in not understanding, right?
Oh, just not 100%.
Not getting it. And so I think for a lot of parents, just finding out, oh, they need more information about all this big, mm-hmm. you know, these big changes that are happening in our family. Weird. Okay, I can do that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And maybe the third thing would be just keeping to a routine as much as mm-hmm. you can. I feel like that's the number one thing everybody recommends when something big is going on. But I would say to take it a step further and make the routine visual mm-hmm. using a schedule makes a huge difference for kids. It makes them feel a sense of safety. Like there's a big difference between feeling safe and being safe. Mm-hmm. And while most kids are actually physically safe, they might not feel it. When things are changing a lot, it can be really overwhelming to them, and they literally don't feel safe. So to show them every day starts and ends the same with that routine chart, and then to show them on a weekly calendar what's coming down the line, that's why it makes such a big difference. Mm-hmm. It reminds them that they're actually, I do have a handle on this. It's not so overwhelming and in their heads and they're trying to keep track of everything.
Yeah. I would add to some advice that I got when we had a death in the family. My son was, it seems like everything around my son was 2.5, 3 years old. So I could trace back a lot of stuff.
A rough
there.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. But my mom passed away. And so my wife and I were like, do we take him to the wake, to the visitation? And our daycare provider said, just let him ask the questions. And she knows me pretty well that I ask a lot of questions. She was like, let him ask the questions, you answer it and don't expand on it. Just answer the question. And so we ended up taking him. He asked a couple questions at the casket. I answered and we moved on. It was good. And maybe that's not great advice from a clinical side of things, but it was given to me and it worked. It was kind of like, let them lead the conversation and don't feel like you have to fill the holes because they need to get,
I agree with that.
Once they understand, like Nikki said, once they understand, they'll stop asking questions. Mm-hmm.
And also I think it goes back to the whole birds and the bees question.
Now we've taken a dark turn.
I'll never forget. I don't remember. Must have been a joke. I don't know where I heard it, but there was a kid where the mom had taken the kid to the doctor and the kid said, "Mommy, what's sex?" And the mom is going into this whole long thing. And the kid is like, I just meant on that piece of paper, it says sex and then it has an M and an F. And it's we sometimes turn things into way bigger deals than they needed to be, where we could have been what do you mean? He's right there. What's that mean? And it's a way shorter conversation now.
Yeah. Yes. Boy, now it's scrambled after dark now.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about writing a book about that conversation?
I have not. I feel like there's a lot of them out there. So I'm just looking to fill holes where people are struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's a difficult conversation.
That is
have,
true. And correct? It also has to do with bodies. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Just never know. But what other books are you thinking about in the future? Nobody stops at 11.
I know, that's just too weird. The next one is for anticipatory grief. What that basically means is if someone has been sick for a very long time, they often don't want to tell their kids when the end is near. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of this is kind of turning into a pathway where, the initial conversation about cancer, for example, can be had with what happens when someone I love has cancer. And then metastatic cancer is treated, that's when it's spread all over your body, is treated now as a chronic illness. And so parents might need to explain, why they don't feel good. And so that latest book, What Happens When Someone I Love Doesn't Feel Good, is a great interim conversation to have with your kids if you have a terminal illness but you don't want to talk about death. But then what happens if it actually turns out that this life-limiting illness is coming to an end? How do you have the conversation with your kids when you are going to die? And I always think about my friend Emily when I have any of these ideas of books to write. And I just think, is there anything that I could have done that would have helped her have a conversation with her daughter so that her daughter didn't say, oh, mommy's going to the hospital because she's sick. And then she just never came back.
Yeah.
There's lots of books about grief and coping with grief. And there's really nothing out there that's my parent is dying. Mm-hmm. And that causes a lot of feelings. And what now? So that's the next one. Very uplifting to write over Christmas break.
Oh, yeah.
Super uplifting.
But I applaud you for writing the books and for having this, but also just having a nice candid conversation about it because it is a very serious topic. And sometimes you can get really bogged down in the seriousness. So to sit here and kind of laugh about it, I think is very good.
I think, when you've gone through something and I have so many friends with cancer, just having been young and going through cancer, you have to laugh at it, because if you don't, you will just cry all day long. And it really is a relief to be able to talk with people who get it and who aren't going to make it heavier, because you don't want to have to take care of everybody else's feelings when, you know, you're dealing with something really hard. Yeah, so,
because you've got your own feelings to process.
Totally. Totally. And it's funny because my mom has now had cancer twice. We had a cancer sandwich. She had it first, then I had it, then she had it the year after me. Gosh. I know, it was really not a good go.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talk about it a lot. Like, you know, we have to laugh at how horrible this is. Like, you know, we make a lot of jokes. Like, you know, we have a whole family and none of us have any boobs. Wow.
That's hilarious.
But that leads me to ask. It is hilarious, and I think, like, do you use humor in your books? Is there an element of that in these stories?
I mean, they're light topic. Like they're light in the way that I go about it. Very matter of fact, and the illustrations are engaging and like happy. I will tell you, one of the books that I got to explain cancer to my daughter, I do not know how this got published. The doctor was holding a giant knife with blood on it.
Oh my God. I don't know how that got through editing, you know?
Also don't know. So there's nothing like that. My whole goal is to make things like as non-scary as possible. And then I have a book that's like general change. It's called Nothing Stays the Same, but that's okay. And that book has a lot of humor in it. Also the chronic illness one does too. When my writing partner, who's a child life specialist, took it around. She works at Mayo Clinic. She took it around to all the doctors and she was like, the number of people that were giggling just made me so happy. So yeah, I mean, kids love that. They need it. And so do adults. I mean, we just take things really seriously when they're really hard. And if we can just lighten it up a little bit, it helps everybody.
Having those serious conversations, do you recommend having a little humor with the kids if they're older? I guess you can't, you know, joke around with an 18-year-old.
I would say leave it to later. Okay. When you're having that initial conversation, I think just to be as matter of fact as possible. And, you know, the chances are high if it's a really hard conversation, like you're having to tell your kids you're getting a divorce or you have a life-threatening illness, like you're not going to be in a position where you feel like you can do that because you're still in the like trauma and stress of it. Okay. And I think parent, like, try to keep it together as much as you can, but also just to say to your kids, you know, I'm having a lot of really big feelings about this. So I just want you, you know, it's okay if you have really big feelings about it too. And then as time goes on, you know, you see how different people cope with things. Kids are not going to cope with, as strange as this sounds, it's like kids are really not going to cope with your impending death in a different way than they cope with like a bully on the playground. Like if they're a kid that's going to go in their room and slam the door because they had a bad day at school, they're probably going to cope with this in a similar way. So it's, if they're not the lighthearted type, they probably aren't going to turn into one.
So show some vulnerability.
Totally.
Well, you know that I have a long list of about 11 books to order. So I'm going to do that. But in the meantime, how can our listeners find you? Are you on social media? Can we find you on Amazon? What does that look like?
Yeah, you can find all my books on Amazon. You can just search for my name, Sarah Olscher. And I also have a website, saraholscher.com. And then all the visual schedules are at mightyandbright.com.
Very nice. Well, Sarah, we really appreciate your time with this episode. And I appreciate, and I think Nikki does too, what you're doing. I think that's great to write these children's books about very difficult conversations. And I'm sure the listeners thank you as well. So thank you so much. And we'll look for you on social media. This is one of those where I now want to say, like, Sarah, put muffs on as we tease the next episode, because our next episode, we're talking about when it's okay to lie to your kids. So that'll be out in a couple of weeks. As always, feel free to share this episode with those who you think can benefit. Again, I don't think this is just for kids with anxiety or anything. This could benefit every parent out there and every child. So our whole goal in starting this podcast was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you